Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn still here with us in studio. Thanks for doing 2 hours with us today, Trent.
Oh, I'm happy to.
And we're talking about, well, life issues with those who say they are pro-choice. If you are a pro-choice person and would like to tell us why you have come to that position, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Trent is an apologist here at Catholic Answers. He goes all around talking about the Catholic faith, and he leads pilgrimages. He has a podcast, Council of Trent.
And I also have, if you're interested in pilgrimages, go to Greece2019.com because I'll be leading a pilgrimage to Greece in the footsteps of St. Paul, all through Greece and Ephesus and Patmos, where John wrote Revelation. So that will be one I'll have coming up this summer. That's at Greece2019.com. And yes, that you asked me before, they was available? I'm like, yep. Yeah. It was.
It's like, weird to me, Greece 2019, you'd think somebody had that. I don't know why.
I guess there's nothing really big going on in Greece in 2019 except for our
pilgrimage. I'm going to try to guess where you're going next year, and I'm going to get whatever that is 2020, and then I'm going to sell it to you. I'm going to make you pay me for it.
Oh, okay. Well,
make you not kill me anymore.
What if I do a private pilgrimage to Tahiti 2020?
No, I'm not going to make you pay me. I'm going to make you take me.
Ah, okay.
I would like to go to Tahiti. I'd like to see Tahiti. You ever been there?
Nope. I have seen the postcards. I have seen the pictures. I'm sure I have flown over it a lot, because I, you know, have gone to Australia pretty frequently, but it's nowhere near as pretty from the flight to Australia because you're 30,000 feet up and it's the middle of the night.
I'm aware how airline flights work, but
no, just to let you know. Well, I mean, have you ever flown to Australia?
I have never flown to Australia.
Well, how do you know they don't do things differently down
under? That's true.
Maybe they fly in the middle of the day 500 feet above the land. So you can get a great view.
I would love to fly 500 feet.
16 hours.
Yeah, it would be cool. But I'm sure you would scare some people on the way, though. Like people in their fishing trawlers and you're 500 feet over them in a 747.
Yeah, except probably 777, 787.
Well, thank you for turning that introduction into an ad for your upcoming pilgrimage.
Opportunity to share the pilgrimage.
2019. No, Greece.
2019.
Okay, yeah. .com is how you find out if you how to go on that pilgrimage with Trent. Our number here, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Why are you pro-choice is our question. If you're a pro-choice person, pick up that phone and call. We want to talk to you. And we start this hour with Kevin in Boise, Idaho. Kevin, why are you pro-choice?
Well, it comes down to free will. And free will, you know, you reflect on God's law, employee's law, and choice. And every human has their choice, right or wrong, good or bad. And individuals who support abortion is a choice. And if it's not against employee's law or people's law, I am not going to criticize them. I personally would have.
Kevin, I didn't understand you. You said people's law and boys' law, God's law? What was that other one?
Boys' law. In other words, boys' law is people's law and God's law.
So human law and divine law.
Correct.
Okay.
And the free will to make the choice. And if an individual chooses to have an abortion, that individual is going to have to answer for that choice.
Answer to who?
To God, you know.
Okay.
For their sin.
Why would they have to answer to God for having an abortion?
If the point is that abortion is a sin, and as I understand it as a Catholic, you know, at some point in time there has to be a reckoning.
Okay.
Or, in the Catholic faith, if you simply go to your priest and ask for forgiveness, all is forgiven. So, again, it just comes back to choice And
Kevin, you're right, though, that position. That abortion is a sin, and sins that are serious, well, all sins in one way or another, are a violation of the Ten Commandments. Which commandment do you think abortion violates?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Well, and I don't support abortion myself.
Why don't you support abortion?
Saying, because of my values, because I am a practicing Catholic, and I believe that if my wife and I conceived a child, or if she became pregnant, you know, we would have the child to term and raise that child as, you know, we're expected. But my personal belief is that if somebody chooses to have an abortion and the state law or human law allows it,
okay,
then the only repercussions they're going to have is with the divine law.
Right.
But now, I don't think abortion should be used as birth control. That is absolutely
But Kevin, I want you to see, I feel like your position, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I want you to see that for yourself. So that's why I'm kind of asking these questions, hopefully that you'll see that. What particular Catholic value, what is it in particular that makes abortion a sin or using abortion as birth control really bad? What is it that's bad about abortion?
Well, you're killing, destroying life or ending life.
Right, but it's not any kind of life, you know, because if you go out hunting, you shoot a squirrel, that ends a life, you know, but it's not, or even if you step on a snail, that ends a life. But abortion is different because it involves a human life, right?
I think we all know that. I think your listeners are smart enough to know that that's what I'm referring to.
Right,
But
it just doesn't make sense to me, though, because one, God's divine law, when I was mentioning the commandments, it seems clear abortion violates the fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not murder. So like with murder,
Correct. That
violates God's law, and we have human laws against murder. Now, there's some points in history where it was legal to murder born people. I mean, in Nazi Germany, they murdered people who were handicapped, people who were Jews or political dissidents, things like people like that. So human law, could you agree, sometimes human law is wrong and we need to change it in order to protect people?
I agree. And that's what the irony of this conversation is I don't disagree with you, but I also believe that a woman has God-given free will to make that choice. And if, let's say, if a woman or any human being is on death row and they're executed, they're being killed, you know? So it's the same scenario.
Well, it's not the same because, well, one, there are actually Catholic philosophers who would argue that you shouldn't directly kill any human beings, even someone on death row. But traditionally, the difference it is wrong that the death penalty involves the killing of a person found guilty of a capital crime deserving of death, something like first degree murder. Like we would agree it's wrong and the state should not be allowed to execute innocent people, even if they thought they had a really good reason. So here's what I'm trying to figure out. And I've heard this argument before, and here's what I can agree with. Yes, if you say people have free will, so they're going to choose to have abortions, I would say, well, you're right. People have free will. They might choose to harm other people, whether it's through abortion or rape or murder or burglary. You're right. People have free will. Nothing we do can take away someone's free will. Even if you make something illegal, would you agree? Even if you make something illegal, you don't take away people's free will because they can still break the law, right? Yeah, right. So,
totally agree.
Yeah. So we don't take away their free will. The question is, do we demand that people be held accountable for their actions? So when we pass laws exist so you can be held accountable that if you hurt other people, you will be punished. One, so that justice is preserved, so that the wrong that you've committed is righted somehow by you deserve punishment for what's happened to balance the scales of justice. And two, by punishing you, that deters other people from committing this kind of harm. So I'll just have this position with you. I agree. People have free will. We can't take that away from them. Some people will choose to have an abortion, and they will have to stand before God if they do not repent of this sin, and they will have to answer for it. But that only shows that some people sin and God will judge them. There's still the option here that God will also judge us and ask, what did you do for these little children who needed to be protected? What did you do to protect them? And if I said, well, I let people exercise their free will, what if God just says to me, but these babies never even got the chance to exercise their free will because you didn't speak up for them? What am I going to say to God? You know, what do you think?
Well, I think, quite honestly, that's an individual, a case-by-case basis. I can't speak for you.
What if he said that to you? Just Kevin, he says, look, Kevin, these are babies. You and I, it should be clear. You don't kill human beings. Thou shalt not kill. Human beings are made in the image of God. And as human beings, we're called to care for one another. I mean, our faith is clear. Jesus says that we're, to love our neighbor as ourself. That's the greatest commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself. So if God asked you, how did you love your unborn neighbor? What are you going to say?
Well, I mean, the practical answer, the pragmatic answer for me is I would probably say, well, I didn't know my neighbor, had an abortion and this fetus' life was terminated. Albeit, if my sister told me, hey, I'm going to have an abortion, I would sit down and say, look, please don't. This is a human life. I would do everything I could.
Well, Kevin, here's something loving you could do for your unborn neighbor. Let's say Roe versus Wade is overturned. Could happen soon. We don't know. And you could go down to a voting booth and check a box that says, make it illegal to abort unborn children. Would you be willing to do that for your unborn neighbor?
Absolutely. Yes, I would.
Amen.
Because my personal... Yeah.
Okay.
I would... I don't... For me, I don't... wouldn't have pro-choice as an option. I'm very... pro-life in my personal life, but I don't feel that the choice should be taken away from others as long as it isn't breaking man's law at this point.
Right, but we could always revise man's law so that it's more in accord with the natural law that God himself gave us so that we can protect all human beings. And I think you do see that. I just hope that you'll ruminate a little bit over what we talked about, and I hope those beliefs will settle evenly. So, but thank you for calling, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. We're asking pro-choice folks today to tell us why you are pro-choice. If you're willing to do that, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Now more than ever, we need to get good Catholic books in the hands of the faithful and those who maybe are considering the Catholic Church. If you'd like to help with that, we've got bulk book sales going right now where you can get books that you can put into other people's hands, whether family or friends or neighbors, maybe people in your parish. If you're going to put them out, get your pastor's permission, that kind of thing. But books are normally that we have some books priced up to $16.95 right now can be as low as $3 to $5 a copy when you purchase in bulk. Why We're Catholic, Made This Way, Delivered, Restored, Persuasive Pro-Life, all of our 20 Answers titles, all on sale at bulk prices if you go to the bulk book specials category at shop.catholic.com.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Peggy Normandin.
I was really pretty vain in my mid-20s. I was consumed with all those, superficial trappings in life. Well, during this time, I had a dream where my grandmother appeared to me. She was a very loving, plain, modest woman of great faith. Well, in the dream, she was absolutely radiant. And she said, "This is what I look like now. Everything is perfect in heaven, Peggy. This is all that matters." What a powerful spiritual wake-up call that was.
Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin. Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice? If you're willing to answer that question, give us a call, 888-31-TRUTH. We start this segment with Rocky in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on 94.9 FM. Rocky, why are you pro-choice?
Well, I'm not particularly pro-choice in the sense that I don't believe that you should just be able to just choose. I am pro-life with an addendum that just, and as is always put forward, that rape is a very significant issue, and that would just be it seems to place a very large burden on the woman to be required to carry that, to give birth to that child and to raise him.
Sure. And yes, Rocky, and go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sure.
No, you go.
I agree with you. When people ask me, what do I think about abortion in the case of rape? I mean, it's easy or it's tempting to just want to say, well, I think it's wrong. This child shouldn't have to be punished for the crimes of his father. But I do think we have to honestly confront this and say it's a grossly unfair situation. And it's just awful that here's a woman who never intended to become pregnant, who now is pregnant and has a child, and it has to be forced. There are one of three options she is going to be forced to do, and they're all carry incredible burdens. She's either forced now to have an abortion, forced to place her child for adoption, or forced to raise this child. And those are three things no one should ever be forced into doing. And so it's just incredibly unfair. And I think what's hard is when we look at situations, you know, it's hard for us when we are confronted with no good option or no just solution. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing we can do to make this woman unraped, for example, unless we invented time travel or something like that. You know, we just, we're stuck with this, and it's like, oh, it's just unfair. But then there's nothing we can do about that. So I think we have to just sit there and say, okay, yeah, this is unfair, and a lot of the injustice here we can't change, but at least the least we can do is try to find the least bad option moving forward. We can try to not add injustice on top of this. So for me, it was wrong for this woman to be raped and forced to become pregnant. But what do we do to remedy that? Do we force the, you know, do we have this woman now become an accomplice to the death of her child? Or do we give her support during this time? And I think that, you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, Rocky. I think a lot of people, they support abortion in the case of rape because they feel like, well, at least this will help the woman maybe move on from this. She won't be pregnant anymore. She won't have to endure this. But the thing is, the memory of the rape will still live on, and abortion, ending the life of her child, that trauma will go along with her as well. So the question is, the trauma of rape will continue. Do we want to add the trauma of abortion to continue along with it, or maybe try to redeem this evil however we can with a child whose existence is always good? So you see what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Absolutely. I understand exactly where you're coming from. I would only say that I think it's reasonable. Say just perfect world, and this is something that happens once a year, to allow that option on a legal level, and on top of which, because it doesn't only affect the woman, but it affects the child. I'm quite certain that being a child of rape is equally, if not more, damaging. There's always a possibility that you don't know, but
right.
But
Rocky, I would put it this way, though. Number one, I mean, suppose when you go out in the world and you're on the bus, you're on a train, in an airport. It's all travel examples. You're out and about. You could walk by somebody and not know it, that they were conceived in rape. And I don't think that would, if you found that out, I don't think you would think to yourself, oh, this person, maybe it would have been better if they had never existed at all. That all of us, we come into this world, and it's funny, we don't get to choose our parents. It's the great lottery of life, you know. God providentially orders us to be born to certain people. And I think sometimes we wish, like, oh, I wish I could have been born to so-and-so. Wouldn't it be great to be Trent Zuckerberg? Maybe. I don't know. Sure, you might have a lot of opportunities. I don't know how Mark Zuckerberg is as a dad. He seems a very caring individual. But the thing is, we don't get to control who our parents are. There's a lot of things we don't get to control in life. We control how we respond to the situations God has given us. So some people are born into very difficult situations. So as human beings, what do we do? Do we try to alleviate those difficult situations and care for the people who are in them through no fault of their own? Or do we just try to end their lives because they're in a difficult situation? We should try to reduce the difficult number of difficult situations, not the number of people in those situations. So I think if we look at it that way, we can compassionately approach the issue of abortions that are chosen because of rape and provide a nonviolent solution that is best both for mother and for her child.
Rocky, we will leave it there. I hope that that was helpful. Thank you very much for that call. I mean, Trent, on a planet of 7 billion people, one would, just knowing what one knows about human nature, there are millions of children conceived in rape, one would assume.
Well, in the United States, and, to put it this way, I mean, we know that there are about 10,000 abortions that are obtained every year because someone is conceived in rape.
Okay.
So if you think that, you know, even if one out of every two women in this situation chooses abortion, that would still be 10,000 children every year who are conceived in rape. But I think the number is probably far higher, actually.
Yeah.
So you're right. And so
we know of many children who talk about the fact that they later learn that in life from their mother.
Yeah.
And they're so grateful to their mother. They're not like, oh, I wish I had never existed.
Yeah. I mean, some people may feel that way. But if you come to the belief, I wish I had never been born, then I think what's required there is counseling and help to understand, no, you are a valuable human being. You matter. No matter how the cards have been dealt in life, you are valuable. You are loved. You are a beloved child of God, no matter where you came from, no matter what physical, emotional, or spiritual difficulties you are carrying right now. The answer to the awful things life throws at us is to understand that God has given us his grace so that we can fulfill the advice that St. Paul gave us in Galatians 6:2 to bear one another's burdens.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that. Or Paul writes in his letter to the Corinthians about how we can comfort others through the comfort we first received from Christ. So we can be heroic and helpful to other people in these difficult situations. I mean, we don't want to be flippant towards them, like, as long as you have God, everything's fine. You know, it's hard. It's difficult.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with pain and heartache, the clock on the wall is still ticking. It's still going by. We can't change the past. But as the clock is ticking in front of us and life is keep moving forward, we can ask, how am I going to move forward with it? Am I going to try to move forward trusting in God and just growing in his grace to be strengthened and to endure this and to maybe find redemptive suffering in it, to offer up this suffering for other people,
right,
to get a perspective on it that maybe I can help other people, that if I have suffered, this gives me a window to help other people who are in a similar situation? Are we going to turn outwards to God and helping our fellow man, or are we going to turn inwards with our suffering? Inwards is always a bad idea because then we become bitter, cynical. We want to blame other people, and we give in to anger and despair. We want to turn outwards with that, first to God and then towards others who can help us, and maybe we can help them also.
Amen to that. And I have to say, I sometimes feel like the people who are talking all – they love to talk about empowering women and go girls and all that, but they act as if you poor dear, you can't do anything here. And there are literally millions of tough, courageous, brave women who bore children that they didn't ask for.
Right.
And we don't celebrate those women because we want to have this I think it's because we prefer an ideology that says, oh, just do away with the child.
Well, there's this idea, and a mistaken idea from feminist discourse, that the idea that feminism is correct, that we should treat men and women as having equal dignity.
Yeah.
Men and women should have equal basic rights, but men and women are different. Like, I don't have the right to be treated by an OBGYN because I'm not going to get pregnant. I don't have, I don't have that reproductive anatomy. We treat men and women differently, but not unequally in their basic dignity. So this idea here is that, well, in order for men and women to be treated as equals, they have to be the same.
Oh.
And so there's like this bias that if men and women are different, they'll never truly be equal. And so if women are going to get up to the level of men, then we have to, then they have to get rid of those things that make them different than men. So they not becoming pregnant, going back to work, working just like men do. And then what happens to the children? I don't know. They're either aborted or they're raised in some kind of daycare conglomerate. When actually, no, men and women should be treated equally. You can be equal and different by being complementary to one another. That we're not just individuals jockeying in a rat race to try to get the most income and the most happiness in life. That's not what it's about. It's about living out the vocations that God has given us. He may have called some of us to marriage, some of us to priesthood or religious life. Within vocations, some may be called to full-time employment, men or women. For example, my dad raised us. I was raised by my dad stayed home, my mom worked. So I'm not opposed to women working or things like that. But I do think that we can treat men and women as equals, but not try to turn women into men by getting rid of their reproductive potential or getting rid of the children who they reproduce through abortion.
Why are you pro-choice is our topic today. If you're a pro-choice person and you'd like to tell us why, give us a call. 888-31-TRUTH. The number, Trent Horn is our guest. His brand new book is out now. Made This Way is available at shop.catholic.com. We'll be right back with more Why Are You Pro-Choice after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked five distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from five perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Is the Church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
How do you use the Catechism of the Catholic Church?
Many times we are confused about certain doctrines.
Let's talk about using the Catechism to find the proper answers on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
Now let's return to Cy Kellett and Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice is the question of the hour, and our guest is Trent Horn. We go now to Francis in St. Louis. Francis, why are you pro-choice?
Well, I have a question. I'm not sure if I'm pro-choice or not.
Okay.
In two instances where the health of the mother is at stake, the first one being a tubal pregnancy where the baby would not survive anyway, and the second being where the pregnancy turns septic and is poisoning the mother. And the example I have of that is, I'm not positive because I just read about it through the news media. The lady, the Indian lady in Ireland who died, I think her pregnancy turned septic and they would not perform an abortion to save her life. So, but I'm not positive. Like I said, I just read something in the media and I don't know if I got the full story or not.
Right. And I vaguely remember that. It's Savita Halappanavar was the woman's name in Ireland. But I don't know. I don't recall all the details of that case right off the top of my head. I know there was a website recently. I wish I could recall that talked about a lot of the media distortion that is involved in that case. So why don't I just talk about these issues in kind of a broader context? First, Catholic moral theology allows for medical procedures to treat ectopic pregnancy that indirectly result in the child's death. So if a child implants in the fallopian tube, then what happens there is that the tube has now become damaged. And so it's licit to remove that damaged part of the fallopian tube. The child dies unintentionally. We don't intend the child's death. We're just trying to remove this now damaged part of the woman's body, because if nothing is done, both of them will die. But this part of the tube can be removed because, you know, now it has now become damaged. And that would be a morally acceptable way to save the woman's life. When we approach these scenarios, I like to say that it's not acceptable to either kill the child in order to save the mother, or to kill the mother in order to save the child. But you can intervene into the situation even if the child's death comes about indirectly. So other cases of pregnancy where if you have an infection, things like that, you can treat it with antibiotics or other care. And it may come to the point where you have to do an early delivery of the child if the infection is spreading rapidly. It also puts the child at risk as well. And you would have to maybe do an early delivery. You get to the child near to or at the point of viability to do that. But it's hard to, of course, every case is different. That's why I'd recommend when you have some cases like these, especially if they're very unique, if it's a real case or one that's actually happening now, there are full-time ethicists 24/7 at the National Catholic Bioethics Center who are trained to deal with particulars in cases and advise what are ethical options that can be undertaken. And that website is ncbcenter.org. And that's a great website and great organization to get on these questions. But to say once again that if a woman's life is in danger, it's not like there's no option for doctors. They can treat the pathology, the disease that's killing the mother. They can kill the pathology. They just can't kill one of the patients, whether it's the mother or the child directly. So I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Francis, for that call. Why are you pro-choice is our topic. We go now to Charles in Vermont. Charles, why are you pro-choice?
I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily pro-choice, but I believe that we have to have the option of pro-choice for religious freedom. To me, the idea that there's a soul, that there's an afterlife, our religious beliefs that have no scientific basis at this point in our knowledge. So the idea that a fetus has achieved personhood because it has a soul, that's only a religious belief. It has no basis in scientific fact as we now understand it. So if we say we're killing someone, a fetus it has biological life, but we haven't got any proof it's achieved personhood, from my point of view. So we're deciding to impose a religious belief on those who don't accept it. If a person feels abortion is right for them and they do not accept that the fetus has achieved personhood, that's imposing religious basing legislation on religious belief.
Okay, well,
and we're supposed to be a secular state.
All right, well, Charles, let me offer a counterexample to that. Suppose someone believes it's okay to kill their newborn infant because their religious belief is that you don't get a soul until you can talk and say words. You know, that's when the soul has entered the body, when you can say words, talk, things like that. Or at the very least, they don't believe that a one-month-old newborn is a person. It doesn't have a soul. And that's not a totally out there belief. The philosopher Peter Singer has argued that we shouldn't consider newborns to be persons in some cases. So do you think laws against killing newborns impose the view that religious view that newborns are persons or that they have souls? What do you think about that?
I think the idea that has a soul or doesn't have a soul is irrelevant. A newborn is a person from the point of a scientific point of view.
Okay, let me ask you. Let me ask.
It isn't the point of whether it has a soul or not is the issue.
I agree. I actually agree with you. And in fact, the Catholic Church does not have an official position on when the soul enters the body. There are proposals for it, but the Church has not defined when exactly the soul enters the body, and that the Church's opposition to abortion is based on the fact that the unborn child is a human being. So let me ask you a question. How do you know a newborn is a person? I guess, how does science show us that someone's a person? Is person a scientific category? What is a person?
Well, maybe I'm using the wrong word there, but I because that's what they've said about the church has tried to say it has personhood, and some states have tried to say, what would you call it? A fertilized egg in an ovum in a woman has already achieved personhood. There's been the proposal to make that the law in some states.
That's right.
But personhood is basically, I think, that you can show that there's feelings, that there's self-awareness to some degree, at least. You know, a cat has a bit of a self awareness. I think you can do that with a baby.
Well, are cats persons?
They're sentient beings. Maybe that's the word we need, sentient beings.
Right, but what do we do? But we euthanize probably millions of cats in this country. Are we?
It's not probably a good idea. Probably a sin.
Is that on?
If you want to use that word.
Is the euthanizing of millions of cats on par with, you know, when the Nazis gassed millions of human beings?
Of course not. There's a hierarchy of sentient beings.
All right, well, let me put it this way then. Let's try another sentient being. Rats are sentient. I mean, obviously, they can figure out things in the world. They can be pests. Is it murder to fumigate a barn and kill a bunch of rats?
Yes and no. You're killing them. You're committing an act of killing.
Should we put the farmer in jail for fumigating his barn?
No.
Why?
Because he's been attacked. It's self-defense.
Okay. So, all right. So it's okay to kill. It's okay to kill rats, even though they have sentient feelings. So sentience, it shows, is not okay to kill persons. Because if he found a bunch of babies in his barn, human babies, he couldn't just go and kill them, saying, "I don't know who these babies are, and, you know, I don't want to have to take care of them or drive them down into town." I think, would you agree, there is a difference. There is a clear, obvious difference between killing a rat and killing a newborn baby.
Yes, because the babies don't pose a threat.
Okay. Is it, if you kill a baby, should you go to prison?
Yes, but the reason is that we don't want our own children killed. That a lot of our laws are based on, if that is allowed to happen, it could happen to us.
But Charles, if I have a law,
I don't want my children killed, so I don't allow other children.
What
to
if
be
the
killed?
Law just says you have the right to kill your own children, who are new?
Well,
or
the law
born.
Used to say that in the Old Testament, you did have the right to kill your children.
Where does it say that? Where?
Deuteronomy.
Where?
You have the right. In Deuteronomy, it says that if children speak back to their parents, they have the right to have their children stoned to death.
Deuteronomy provides punishments for people who break the law and the covenant in Israel. And interpreting what these texts means and whether their punishments are literal or non-literal is different from what we're talking about. I want to get back to this main issue. You and I agree that it is wrong to kill newborns. And I think the reason is, what we really want to agree on is because newborns are human beings. Let's even go with your argument. It should be wrong to kill newborn babies because I wouldn't want someone killing my newborn baby. Was that the argument you were making?
I think that's the how our laws work.
Okay. Then why don't we have this law? It should be wrong to kill unborn children because I wouldn't want anyone to kill my unborn children. Would that be a good law?
No.
Why? What's the difference between an unborn child and a newborn?
Well, the difference is it's not viable as a human being. It has not achieved personhood. It's not in any sense. It's only a biological entity without self. It can't indicate its wants. It can't do it. There's no self-consciousness there yet.
But why does that matter? Because we've already shown.
Because that's the basis of personhood to me. Otherwise,
But I don't think it is, because you agree we don't put people in prison. Even if you just, let's say there's a rat on the side of the road and it poses no threat to me and I shoot it. Should I go to prison for life?
Not for life, but you should probably be fined.
I should be fined.
You've taken life without a reason. If you don't like a rat and you just kill it, there should be some sort of a you've taken a life that was self-supporting, that was independent. You've killed something that didn't need to be killed. Okay. There should be a punishment.
Okay, so we should find people who kill rats, but no punishment for people who kill babies before they're born. I mean, I guess that is the impasse that we have reached here, and I'll leave it up to our listeners to see which view is more reasonable then. So, but I thank you for calling in. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Charles. But let me just run something by you, because I want to understand this. If I say the only reason I have a law is because I don't want that to happen to me or my kids, then I have, in fact, given up on the traditional Western view that individuals have rights in and of themselves.
You have.
He's not saying that I have a right to have nobody kill me. He's saying, mm-hmm. I don't want anybody. I can't be killed because he doesn't want
that to happen to him. Yeah. And that's a very modern positivist view of law and where that comes from. And also, I think what we saw in this call demonstrate is the idea of personhood, what makes someone a person, that when you choose qualities like sentience, the ability to feel pain or be aware of your surroundings, here are the problems, is that there are many animals who have the same sentience as humans. As a human, a newborn is just as sentient as a rat or a pigeon. So here is the problem, that either, according to Charles' view, you should be fined for killing a rat or fined for killing a newborn. Oh, you killed your newborn. That'll be $100 there. And, you know, you killed your newborn and you sped off to the casino to gamble. Yeah. Two fines. You know, it's either
speeding and killing the baby.
It's either a fine for killing a rat and a fine for killing a newborn, or it's prison for killing a rat and prison for killing a newborn, because they're both equally sentient. So the punishment should be equal. So clearly the difference, what makes a newborn valuable, cannot be sentience. It has to be something else that makes, what makes a newborn different than a rat? It's a member of the human community. And guess what? An unborn child is a member of the human community as well. And people say it's not viable. Of course it is. It's viable from the moment it's conceived. The child just can't live with outside of the womb. But who cares? They're not meant to. Why not just treat them with respect in the one place they're meant to live?
I want to go to a break, Trent, but I want to ask you just one other question.
Sure.
Can the idea of human rights survive in a society that gives up on God? Because even Thomas Jefferson, who wasn't much of a believer in anything, he said, human beings are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. If we stop believing in a creator, are we done with rights then? Is it all just a power struggle after that?
I think it is very, very difficult to sustain the idea. Because think of human beings. If we all have equal rights, what makes us equal? We're very different in intelligence and abilities.
Right.
Well, we all have human DNA. But if you don't believe in God, how is human DNA more valuable than rat DNA? So you end up according value based on abilities rather than by your identity or your nature. And so while there are countries around the world that are very non-religious and still promote human rights, many of them have inherited this tradition from a Christian framework, from those who first founded these countries. I would say what makes me skeptical of having human rights without God is look what dictatorships and totalitarian regimes that clearly espouse atheism, that clearly make atheism a part of their framework. Look what the Soviet Union did. Look what Cambodia did, the Khmer Rouge, that when you explicitly reject God and promote atheism, you see human beings not as valuable, intrinsically valuable in themselves, but as a means to promote the welfare of the state. And so they become cogs in a machine. And if there's a cog giving you trouble, replace it or get rid of it. That's right. And so the greatest atrocities we've seen in the 20th century were committed by atheistic regimes or regimes that were anti-Christian in what they did. And so even today, when you see in communist China, you've seen, you know, the one-child policy, forced abortions, forced sterilizations, that when you remove God from the situation, you have simply the state becomes the end-all. And human beings serve the state rather than the other way around, and you can have these injustices.
I feel like when I was a kid, you wouldn't have had as many people as you have today where you say, well, a human being has a right, has rights because it's a human being. And they just, today people go, no, they don't. And they just don't.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we're making progress. And that doesn't feel like progress to me.
I think that we have a long road to go to evangelize this culture, and we're just standing on the shore like St. Paul did when he went to Athens and preached about and preached to them and said, there's you have an altar here to an unknown God. Even you recognize there's an unknown God, but I'm here through the to preach the resurrection of Christ, to make him known. Preaching in people say things are so terrible now. Well, I mean, in the ancient world, there are ancient writers who said things like, these people have some shame. They at least don't engage in intercourse outside. You know, so there's stuff in ancient Rome, babies were just abandoned in the wilderness.
Right.
But if they had abortion, maybe they would have chosen that too. So we can go and we can evangelize just like the first Christians did.
Amen to that, brother. You know what will help? Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother. Yeah, and I say that because we're giving it away free right now. You just go to our Facebook page. Just look for Catholic Answers on Facebook. When you go to the Facebook page, you'll see a free ebook available to you there. Get it. That's all we say. Just get it. You don't have to do anything else. Just get it.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
Listening to your program has really touched my heart, and I just see such love and beauty, not only for Christ, but for people in general in the Catholic Church. And now I feel like I need more. I want to serve God more. I feel it so much that he's given me a gift to serve and to touch people, to love people. What would it take for me to maybe look into the priesthood?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back. Why are you pro-choice? Our topic for the day. We return to the phones and go to Dave in Los Angeles. I have a brother, Dave, in Los Angeles, but I assume this is not him. You'll have to tell me if it is. Dave, why are you pro-choice?
Hi, Trent. No, it's not your brother. I do have – where are you located, by the way? I don't even know.
We're in El Cajon, just slightly to the east of the city of San Diego.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I've got a sister back in the Midwest who mentioned that you were on the air, so I don't know if you've heard this before or not. But here's my thoughts, and let me preface by saying I'm not really in favor of abortion, and I wish every pregnancy was a joyful occurrence. But I, like most Americans, still believe that it's a woman's right to choose. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, that's how I feel. And here's the reason. I want all children that are born into this world to be loved. Mm-hmm. But when someone does not want to bear a child, and the mother may be addicted to drugs or they'll mistreat the child or whatever, I'd rather have God take these unborn straight to heaven. It's like, what happens to aborted fetuses? Mm-hmm. Don't they go straight to heaven? And it's the same way with, doesn't God take a child who's stillborn straight to heaven? So I'd rather have that situation than children that are abused and not wanted to begin with. Mm-hmm. And some people say, you put them up for adoption. Some people will have children and they just don't want to have the child for whatever the reason. And I just think it's a mm-hmm. better situation that God takes them straight to heaven. So I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, first, Dave, I want to sympathize with you about how you feel towards children who are abused. I mean, that just fills my heart with a sadness and also a righteous anger at these, helpless children whose parents take out their frustrations on them. I mean, these children, I was talking earlier with Cy about the lottery of birth. They didn't choose these people to be their parents. They haven't done anything to them. And even myself, I feel bad when, you know, when I overreact to my own children and become angry and know they're so little and impressionable, especially toddlers, that how you raise a child until they're the age of five, that really sets them on their path for the rest of their life. And it's such an amazing gift that God would entrust us with these immortal souls. I'm still amazed that God lets us reproduce. You know, I mean, I have to go to the state lets us do it. I mean, I have to go to the DMV to pass a test to drive a car, and they rescheduled me. It takes 6 months here to get a license in California, but I digress. So I see where you're coming from about concern about the abuse of children and them having fit or unfit parents. Would you agree, though, that a lot of times, though, children end up in bad situations, their parents were fine, and then maybe someone loses a job or they get addicted to drugs. So a kid can go from a situation that's good, and then it can turn bad. That happens, right?
Sure.
Sure, okay.
Sure.
So what do we do? Let's say you have a good situation, a little kid's like 2 years old, but then it becomes terrible. The parents are drug addicts. Maybe the dad loses a job, gets hooked on drugs. They run drugs out of their house, prostitution. It's a horrible situation. This two-year-old is already has been really scarred by all of this. Then the parents go to jail. And the kid's going to end up in foster care. And you know, he might be bounced around foster care and get out when he's 18. Do you think we should, instead of having him go through all that, just kill him when he's 2 years old so he goes straight to heaven?
No, but I think that's a whole different situation. I don't think, obviously, that's nobody's for that. But you're saying whether somebody's pro-choice or pro-life, you know, a lot of people, basically, it can be pro-life, but they understand reason for pro-choice. And I think it's a whole different situation when you have a fetus that may not even, like you say, may not even have a heartbeat or anything yet, but the person that's having that child is not responsible at all and don't care, don't want the child. But I just don't think it's right to force them to have the child and to have the child in a bad, terrible situation. But maybe killed by the parent when they are born, when they throw them in a trash can or something. Well, I'd rather have God. I think God's got some responsibility here.
Let me jump in because we don't have a lot of time left. I agree with you. There's a difference between a two-year-old and an unborn child. But I still think the situation's the same, that we agree, because what you're concerned about is someone growing up and having a really bad future in life. So the two-year-old I gave you, he would also have a really bad future in life. He still might have that. But we agree, even if he might have that, what we should do is try to help him, not kill him. And so if we extend that kind of mercy to a born child, I'm just saying it's the same kid. He's just younger when they're in the womb. If the child's heart isn't beating, well, then they've died. And the pregnancy won't continue. The child's just going to be flushed out of the woman's body, or the child is stillborn and the woman will miscarry. But if the child's alive and growing, it's that same little boy or girl. So my point is just that, why do we not kill two-year-olds who are going to have really rough lives? Will we just pray and hope we can change their life around because they're a human being? I'm just saying we should do the same thing, that if the unborn, if they're just as human, I don't think we should treat them differently just because they're a lot younger. I don't see why, because of their age and where they live, we should treat them differently. But what do you think?
Well, I'm just thinking that doesn't God take these children or babies that are stillborn straight to heaven?
The church doesn't teach that all people who die who are not baptized, that they automatically go to heaven. It does. We don't have a settled answer on that question. We have hope in God that he is merciful, and so that those who die without the chance to be baptized, we hope in a merciful God that they will go to heaven. But it's not something that God has clearly revealed to us. What he has revealed to us, what God has clearly told us in his revelation, he says that human beings are made in the image and likeness of God, that we human beings do not have the right to kill other innocent human beings, especially children. In the book of Proverbs, there are six things that God hates, and one of those things he hates are hands that shed innocent blood. And so for us, we may not know what happens to people who die, who will go to heaven, who won't, but we do know that we should not be responsible for their deaths. We should treat all human beings as having equal dignity and equal rights, including those who are waiting to be born.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everybody who called today. We appreciate that you're willing to call and converse with us about these difficult topics. And Trent Horn, thanks for two difficult hours. That's a lot of work for you.
It's important work, and I'm happy to share the gospel and the gospel of life to anyone who's willing to listen.
Praise God. And tomorrow, open forum, both hours, and a week from today, we will be at the conference. If you've been thinking about going to the conference, I think you can still register online, but I don't know. They may have closed it. Anyways, I'm already getting very excited about it. 2 hours of open forum tomorrow. I know Jimmy Akin's got one of those hours. We'll see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.